Michigan's historian Larry Massey was recently presented with the Lifetime Achievement Award by the Historical Society of Michigan. He's known for his colorful storytelling and lectures at schools, libraries, universities, and festivals throughout the state. And Larry Massey is also known for filling up entire library bookshelves with the history books he writes. I'm talking to Larry today about his 21st book, Blue Water, Red Metal, and Green Gold. Hello, Larry.
Hi, Zenta.
Tell us about your newest book, and perhaps you could start with the title.
Well, actually, I thought of the title before I had written it. I just, you know, in my research, I thought, well, in Michigan, we live in these beautiful peninsulas surrounded by the Great Lakes, and so there's blue water. Red metal relates to the copper rush of the 1840s, and then the green gold is what the lumberjacks called the beautiful white pine trees that grew all over Michigan because they were worth a fortune. With the title in mind, I proceeded to write articles about those three things and then 24 other articles about other aspects of Michigan's colorful past.
Now, obviously, you love history with 21 books. What got you so hooked on history?
Well, I first fell in love with old books as a child. Started collecting them and amassed a library. When I graduated from high school, I had 1,000 books. Now I've got 45,000 books. And, you know, I went to college at Western, and with a love of books, I figured I'd major in history because books are the historian's tools. And I love Michigan, grew up here, wouldn't want to live anywhere else. So that's what I chose to specialize in, the heritage of Michigan.
And why is it so important to know history?
Well, you know, there's a lot of different reasons. Some people say, well, if you don't know the mistakes of the past, you're bound to make the same mistakes again. I don't know if that's true or not, because everybody seems to have to make their own mistakes in life, you know.
And your we do keep repeating them quite a bit, don't we?
Well, we do, and on an individual basis, you know. Your parents tell you things, not to do certain things, but you got to go out and discover yourself. Most people do anyway. But what I think is important about heritage and history is that it makes life so much more interesting to know what happened around you. When you walk down an old country road, to know who were those people that lived in those old houses. When you visit a town, to know what happened in the past in that town, why the town was named what it was. All these things just make our life more interesting.
You know, you mentioned 45,000 volumes that you've collected, and I've had the honor of visiting that library. It's pretty incredible. Tell us a little bit more about this library and where it can be found at this point, what you've got in it.
Well, as I said, I fell in love with books when I was about 8 or 9 years old, and it became my passion, and not only to collect them, but to use them to make other books. And so I've, you know, explored old bookshops and antique shops and estate sales, et cetera, over the years, and have picked out books. They're not all about Michigan because I'm very eclectic in my interests, but, you know, I'll find a book that I suspect has some good reference value and kind of thumb through it and get acquainted with it and then set it on the shelf. And it might be 10 years or more before all of a sudden in the middle of a sentence, there's the book I need to find some particular fact. And that kind of vindicates my collecting.
So do you do most of your research from your own library? And I assume some travels and interviews added on to that. Or talk to us a little bit about the research, because accuracy when you're writing history is absolutely crucial.
Oh, it is. It is. Well, what happens when I'm researching some particular subject, say it's the Allegan State Forest, I immerse myself in just about any source that I can find about that. And then, you know, when I'm done with the research, then comes the hard part where you got to sit down and I write longhand on a legal pad and I stare at that yellow pad and try to make something happen. And that's hard work. But along the way, when I'm researching one topic, I'm liable to find something of interest that I think, hey, that's a good story. That maybe down the road I'll write about that. And so I file that away, and then, you know, over the years I might find another fact relating to that. Say it's the Erie Canal or something. It was the immigrant highway to Michigan. And when I've got enough of those things filed away, then my research is pretty much done. And I do use mostly my own library, but, of course, there's oral history connections, talking to people, and occasionally I have to, you know, go to a bigger library or go explore the newspapers on microfilm and things like that. But I have a lot of fun researching.
Have you found yourself on occasion overturning history books, rewriting the facts, because you found that what you find in history books may not actually be accurate?
Oh, yeah. There, errors creep in, and, you know, any historian knows that. I mean, I've even made some mistakes in my own writing. But let me give you an example. There was a wonderful history professor at Western by the name of Willis Dunbar. And he wrote a comprehensive history of Michigan in the 1960s. Well, it was revised by another historian who allowed some errors to creep into it through his own research. For example, Willis Dunbar never said that there were no wolverines in Michigan. He said they were scarce, but there were wolverines in Michigan. We're the wolverine state. Well, this other historian quoted from an article that there were never any wolverines in Michigan. Well, that got me kind of piqued. So I wrote an article proving that there were wolverines in Michigan. And the funny thing about it was I was just about completing the article when they found that wolverine up in Ubley in the thumb.
Now, one of the stories that intrigued me in this particular collection was about the Allegan Forest and the history there, some shady realtors and how they sold property to people. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Well, when the pioneers came into Allegan County, they found this beautiful forest of white pine trees. I mean, trees that were 150, 200 feet tall. Three men together couldn't get their arms around some of those trees. And so the lumberjacks came in and started cutting down all that green gold, and the Kalamazoo River threads through Allegan County, and so that was perfect. That was like a highway to float the logs downstream to a town at the mouth of the Kalamazoo River called Singapore, where there was lumber mills to cut it up. So that went on for, oh, maybe 40 years or so, and then came the Chicago Fire of 1871, where the city lay in ruins, and a call came up, send us more of that Michigan white pine. And so the lumberjacks finished off all the white pine that grew anywhere near the Kalamazoo River in Allegan County within 3 or 4 years. That town, Singapore, they pulled up the lumber mill and moved it up to the Upper Peninsula, and everybody moved away, and the sand covered Singapore. So then we had, you know, all this kind of worthless land, which was covered with these pine stumps, and nobody could do anything with it. And then around the turn of the century, they decided to change the name of this township, which was originally called Pine Plains, to Valley. Anybody that knew anything about farming knew that a Pine Plains would not be a good place to farm, but Valley has this connotation of a beautiful valley, luxuriant, good farming country. These realtors and developers bought this land up for pennies on the acre, platted them into 10-acre farmsteads, and at the same time, there was a kind of a back-to-nature movement. People in the city wanted to return to nature and have small farms. And so they promoted this idea to them, and they began buying up. Now, they were shady in the respect that they knew that the land was worthless, sandy, blow sand, but they planted corn shocks to make it look like there had been a good farming episode. Sometimes, because the land is so arid here, as a matter of fact, it's the only place in Michigan where you can find cactus and yucca growing. They would bury a barrel of water and put a hand pump on top of it and say, "Taste this water, isn't this good?" Whereas anybody that lives out here knows, after a rainstorm, you don't find a puddle; it goes right to the underneath. So these poor folks bought these farmsteads, and they were able to eke along for a few years on the forest mulch. But then by the late 1920s, they were literally starving to death. It was not farmable land. Along came the Great Depression of the 1930s, and one of the New Deal programs was a resettlement program where the government would buy worthless land from people and allow them to buy land elsewhere that was farmable. Or in some cases, they just traded them land. A whole colony of them went from Allegan County up to the Matanuska Valley in Alaska, where they grow those strawberries as big as your fist. And so the government acquired about 50,000 acres of this submarginal land and turned it into the Allegan State Forest. It was later given to the state of Michigan, and the trees gradually returned. And so now we have this beautiful area, 50,000 acres, with these wonderful white pine trees and oak trees, and the land has returned to what it was really meant to be, a forest.
Wonderful. Blue water, red metal, and green gold. What else can readers expect to find in this collection?
Well, there's stories about shipwrecks. There's stories about the copper rush, which rivaled the later gold rush of 1849. There's stories about murder mysteries. There's stories about, I even got some famous actors and actresses in here. I got Ronald Reagan in the book because he portrayed in a movie George Gipp, Win One for the Gipper. And I got Lucille Ball and Desi Arnaz in because they made a movie in 1954 called The Long, Long Trailer. And as it turned out, that trailer was made in Albion, Michigan, the New Moon Trailer. So there's a little bit of everything for anybody. I'm writing for the general public. I try to do my research as carefully as I can, but I want to write so that everyday people can enjoy reading about their heritage.
And Robert Lee Frost was in there, too, Ann Arbor. So for the literary community in Kalamazoo, that was a very interesting story as well.
Yep, he was poet at residence at the University of Michigan in the 1920s.
So what would you want us Michiganders to understand about our state?
Of course, I'm kind of partial, but I think that the Michigan is, the greatest place to live that you can imagine. Even as I look out here at all the snowfall this morning, we've got these lakes, the inland lakes, we've got the Great Lakes, we've got the parks and the sand dunes, and we've got this wonderful heritage, too. And so I just hope I can make people appreciate the greatness of the place where we live.
And where can people buy your book, Larry?
They're available in most of the better bookshops. I know in Kalamazoo, Michigan News Agency carries them and other places, so they're available.
Well, thank you very much for talking with us today, Larry.
Thank you, Zinta. Keep up your good work.